I'm Mike Breen, Public Awareness Officer for the American Mathematical Society, and I'm talking with Moon Duchin, who is at Tufts University in the Department of Mathematics, and she is doing a lot of work with redistricting and gerrymandering and the math involved with that. So, Moon, could you tell us first what gerrymandering is?
Sure. Gerrymandering is a term, I guess a term of abuse, really, that's used for redistricting that people find to be manipulative or unfair.
And it's good that you're in Massachusetts, because the person who lent his name to that, the first half of it at least, was involved in Massachusetts politics a long time ago. People could see that maybe math might be involved to get some measure of unfairness, but how does math apply to redistricting in general or gerrymandering?
Right. Well, it's been a principle for a long time. It's considered now a traditional districting principle that the shapes of districts should be reasonably compact. So the problem is that nobody really ever defines that, but it just means the shapes shouldn't look eccentric or irregular. And so the idea that precipitated my involvement is that geometry could tell you something about shape analysis and tell you when shapes are good and when they're unreasonable.
Is the idea of compact, did you know it when you see it, or it's something that's a little
right.
more obscure?
I think in practice, it's really just the eyeball test. 37 states say something either in their constitution or in statute about requiring compactness, but only two of them use a definition. And so most of the time, it really is just supposed to be how it makes you feel to look at the shape.
Now, one thing, the legal definition of compact is different from the math definition of compact.
Well, in that there is no legal definition.
Okay, right.
Right. No, so I'm a geometric topologist, and in topology, of course, we have this other idea about that compact means, you know, every open cover has a finite subcover. Of course, that's got nothing to do with what these guys have in mind. They're thinking of compact sort of in the way that you might compact snow into a snowball. In other words, kind of condensed, holding together well, not too dispersed. That's how compact tends to be intuitively delineated in political science.
And so is part of your effort trying to get a definition that a court could apply?
In a sense, yes, that's a component of what my group is trying to do, because we think that there are over 30 definitions of compactness that have been proposed in the political science literature, but they tend to be in this intermediate place between math and something easier to explain publicly, and that makes them not very good. So I think people have felt constrained to not do anything too fancy, and as a result, our definitions of compactness that are in the literature so far really don't have a lot of teeth and really don't track very well with the democratic principles that we're trying to line up with. So one of the things my group is trying to do, we want to avoid the appearance that we're just adding to that list of 30 with yet more flavor, but we'd like something that's, I would say, modernized, because redistricting is a discrete math problem, but because people are discrete, after all. But almost all of the notions of compactness that are out there already come from classical study of manifolds, you know, and they're sort of ill-suited to the problem at hand. So, yeah, one thing we're thinking really hard about is building a graph that represents the people, how they live and how they're clustered and how they're arranged in the state, and then partitioning the graph with some discrete geometry techniques that produce an outcome that you might call measurably compact.
And do you sense a lot of progress in this?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing, we had a big workshop here at Tufts earlier in August with some of the most luminous mathematical minds in the country coming together to talk about this. And there's just tons of energy, many ideas thrown at it from all corners of math. So you can, you know, we already know there's been so much success combinatorializing geometry in the form of discrete Laplacians, in the form of discrete isoperimetry in my own field of geometric group theory. And I think now there's a real critical mass of people thinking about how to take those ideas and intelligently apply them to this real world problem.
Yeah, so your conference, which was so big that you had to have some of the meetings in a theater, a local theater.
That's
here,
right.
That just happened. We're recording this in the summer of 2017. And in the near future, there's a Supreme Court case about the redistricting in Wisconsin. Is some math going to be heard in those arguments?
Yeah, but a different kind. So the case that's coming up in Wisconsin, that's about their assembly district. The case is called Whitford, either Whitford v. Gill, Whitford v. Nichols. The trick there is that the case is about partisan gerrymandering, which is sort of a new area for the court. The Supreme Court has avoided that topic. In other words, this is specifically about gerrymandering to entrench an advantage for, in this case, the Republican Party, although the Democrats certainly have their own share of partisan gerrymandering. So the math that comes up in this case has to do with the sort of two-party division and whether one side is entrenching its advantage over the other. So you won't see shapes discussed except really by proxy. Instead, you'll see a focus on metrics of advantage for one party over the other. There's a formula at the heart of the case called the efficiency gap, which is supposed to measure how the wasted votes for the Democrats compare to the wasted votes for the Republicans. Without going into too much detail, I'll just say the argument of the plaintiffs is that the Republicans have organized the district to make the Democrats waste more votes. And that makes a person who wants to vote Democratic have less weight to their vote, and it gives them an unconstitutional burden. That's the claim, and it'll be really interesting to see how the Supreme Court fields that claim.
And are you optimistic about
Well, there are many possible outcomes, and I'll tell you what I'd love to see happen. I think that this efficiency gap idea, I'd love to see that be treated by the court not as the answer, but as an opening move towards finding refined metrics for measuring partisan gerrymandering. So, for various reasons, I think the efficiency gap doesn't quite measure what it says it should. In the Wisconsin case, though, that's okay. It's such an extreme gerrymander that almost any quantification that you throw at it will pick that up. So I do hope that the plaintiffs prevail, but I think, you could understand, you could be sympathetic if the Supreme Court justices really want to lean on this formula to do the work for them. But I don't think this formula is the end of that story. I hope it's just the beginning of lots of refined attempts to quantify gerrymandering.
Now, Moon, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that sounds great to me.
All right, that's Moon Duchin, who is at Tufts University in the Department of Mathematics, and she's talking about math and gerrymandering or redistricting. Thanks very much, Moon.
Okay.